Hi. Well, I'm David Zucker, and you're watching Show Business Monkeys, whatever that is. Around this town, I'm all right. Around this town, I'm all right.
I mean, no consequence when you're playing with the fire. Move to the left, man, no fuss, no fight. You're living on the low. Today I am joined by writer, director, whose films have been some of the most quoted in film history. We've got Airplane, Naked Gun, From the Files of Police Squad, Naked Gun 2.5, The Smell of Fear, Naked Gun 33 1/3, The Final Insult, Basketball, Scary Movies 3, 4, 5, High School High, and my favorite, Top Secret. I am pleased to be chatting with David Zucker. So thank you very much for being here today. How have you been doing?
I've been doing fine. I have a house. What more could I want?
That's more than a lot of people.
And so this is my home office, which I just redid. So I never could do Zoom calls from here before because it was kind of dingy, and I undinged it.
Nice. Well, yeah, when I started doing a lot of Zoom calls, I did the same just to have a space that was nice. So
yeah, I know, and yours still looks dingy. I don't know.
It does.
Sometimes,
you know?
It doesn't work, but I'm sure you can keep at it. Yeah.
I'll keep cracking away. Now, your first film, Kentucky Fried movie, it came out in the 70s, which were a wild time for comedy. And, you know, with Lampoon and National Lampoon and SNL blowing up, but you also had like this strange space where adult cinema was entering into the mainstream, which is, you know, you reference in Kentucky Fried Movie. How did all of that culture sort of come together to inform your first big project?
Well, you know, it's hard to get a perspective on it because we were on the inside of it and we just did what we thought was funny. And it, starting in the early 70s, I think we realized that all the politics wasn't that funny and we were going to do media satire. So that's what we started to do. And just being silly, because there was a lot of seriosity about the 60s. And it kind of infiltrated the humor, which made it a little hard to do because it was, you know, everybody had an axe to grind. So, which it later became one of our rules. We evolved 15 rules, but you know, it just happened naturally to us. We didn't do it, you know, to entertain. I mean, for other people, we did what made us laugh, and it turned out to make other people laugh too.
Now, concept of a parody has been around almost a parody film has been around almost as long as film, like the first one being the little train robbery, which was made in 1905, 2 years after the great train robbery. But you and Jerry and Jim really elevated the parody to a new level, creating the spoof in a lot of ways. What do you feel makes a spoof special, like magical, compared to another comedy film?
Well, I think just having serious actors, not having comedians. And so that focuses, I guess, the audience's attention on the material and what we're doing. And we always thought that comedians got in the way of things. But I mean, Mel Brooks had done spoof, and I don't know if Woody Allen didn't really do spoof, but he did. He certainly did zany comedy. Those were all with funny characters, and they were great. But we want to do what had been done before, and that it continues to be what we're trying to do is just new stuff and original stuff.
One of the things that I found amazing is you took people like Leslie Nielsen and Val Kilmer, who weren't really known for doing comedic roles. Is there some advice you gave them, or something that you helped coach them
to really land these
Well,
jokes and deliver
the
it?
whole concept was, as I said, not to have comedians. There was no
Yeah.
Jerry Lewis, there was no Jim Carrey. And I think those are fine artists, but we just didn't want anybody to be funny, so we told Leslie Nielsen and Peter Graves, Robert Stack, and Lloyd Bridges just to not even play it straight, but play it deadly serious. That was the core of it, and they got it. They got it in gradual, varying degrees.
I think that a lot of times people try too hard to be funny, and
Yeah,
that
well,
can, like you're saying, that can take away from the funniness. And that Leslie Nielsen's delivery in Airplane is so pitch perfect. Like, it's
right, and
just so on the nose.
it's indistinguishable from his acting style in the serious movies that he had done. So, we just didn't think there needed to be a middleman. So in a way, Airplane was, it was direct from the writers to the audience, and we didn't have a middleman.
Awesome. Now, Airplane is so incredibly joke dense. I mean, there's maybe, three jokes in a per minute at times. Do you have you mentioned your 15 rules. Can you tell people a bit about those rules when it comes to writing a comedy, writing a spoof?
The first rule is joke on a joke, and there ensues other rules that I've even talked about in the last 2 minutes, like axe grinding, and there are many others, but I'm now doing an online course in comedy, in spoof comedy. It's very particular. In a larger sense, it's about, trying to avoid the mistakes people make in making comedies, and that's called Master Crash. So you can get into it. It's actually a free community, mastercrash.com. So we really are developing a really nice community, and we have guests in for my podcast, which is called Naked Comedy. It hasn't been released yet, but we have a kind of a live audience of our master crashers, and they ask questions. So that's that it, it's there's the 15 rules, but that doesn't even begin to tell the whole story. And I will say this, that it I guess this kind of spoof looks easy because everybody thinks they can do it. It is possible to do it, but I think there's a method to it. And I, when Jerry and Jim and I did our spoof movies, there was a lot of discipline to it, and it wasn't all crazy and zany and just throw stuff up against the wall, see what sticks.
That's something I find with internet comedy. A lot of people try to emulate those same kind of spoofs and parodies and stuff, and just very quick vignettes. But they seem to, not everybody, there's some great talent
Yeah,
out
I
there.
see a lot of great stuff on my Instagram, and it makes me laugh. And it's and there's some good stuff. So I wouldn't say that nothing's funny, but I will say that in movies now, there's nothing funny. There hasn't been anything funny in years. I mean, there's non-spoof stuff, like there was this movie, The Holdovers. And that made me laugh, but it's not, I mean, not a spoof and not a crazy zany comedy, but zany comedy has been disappeared for years. And the recently released Naked Gun 4 was, it didn't work because they idolized Naked Gun, Airplane, Top Secret, et cetera, but they didn't know the rules. So that's part of what inspired me to do this Master Crash course.
It really feels like there's an empty spot in the film world right now for just comedy in general. Everything seems to be these big tentpole films, and people have forgotten that, sometimes people want to go out and just laugh.
Right. Yeah. No, there's a lot of good tentpole films too. Like Tom Cruise movies, I think, are great. He does Mission Impossible. They're great, and they're huge budget, excessive movies. And Top Gun Maverick, I loved. So, you can't go too broad that everything's bad. I mean, all comedy movies are bad, but and I have a script that I'm preparing to go into production with soon, and we're casting it now, and it's a fresh idea. It's not like doing Naked Gun and trying to replace Leslie Nielsen and doing a cop station. I mean, we had a script. I wrote a script with Pat Proft and Mike McManus, who I collaborate on a lot of things, and we did a script to Naked Gun 4. It was called Naked Gun 4, and Nordberg did it, and it Paramount liked it. We were going to do it, but then Seth MacFarlane kind of swooped in, and it's just something that Hollywood does. They'll rather go, they'd rather go with big studio, big agency, big producer, big star. So, but we didn't even set our script in a LA cop station. That again is copying a 30 plus year old idea, and you have to replace Leslie Nielsen. It's like you can't replace Leslie Nielsen. And Liam Neeson is a fine actor, but it's just not a fresh idea. So we set our script, which was called, I think, Naked Impossible. We set it as it's a international spy thriller. So it's Bourne Identity, Bond, Mission Impossible, and we had a young lead, not trying to replace, not doing the old guy idea, which was a 30-year-old idea, and so, but the studios don't want to do anything new. They're risk averse, and it's just not particularly only the Paramount executives who are knuckleheads. I think, the studios, that's just the way things are run now. It's big corporate. Now, back in the day, and I hate to sound like, this old guy saying, when we did it, it was great. But, when we came to Paramount in 1980, it was Michael Eisner, Jeffrey Katzenberg, Barry Diller, Frank Mancuso, and all these guys were willing to take a chance. They were willing to do a new idea. So it's Hollywood has changed. It's gotten much worse.
Now, talking about some of the joke structure, oftentimes you seem to there's a lot of jokes that like sort of joke on a joke, but they feel like they're jokes that are just for the for you almost in a way. Like in Top Secret, the East German national anthem, unless you are German. It's not like today where you can like pull out a phone and auto translate.
Right. No, we just did I think that joke, if I can remember it correctly, was just, the crazy lyrics that they have. The German national anthem was, I don't know, we're going to invade other countries or whatever we were doing then. But, the pace, as you had mentioned, came from our stage show. We ran a stage show for years in LA, on Pico Boulevard in West LA. And we were on stage, and we never wanted to be on stage when there wasn't laughs. It was deadly if we were just caught upstairs on stage, just with the audience sitting on their hands. So we just did joke after joke, and we carried that over into movies, which to us didn't seem like such a new idea. But everybody said, "Oh my God, the pace is amazing! An airplane broke new ground." I guess it did, but. It was just the same thing we had been doing on stage, and we got used to it.
There's definitely an appetite for it, and I think there continues to be an appetite for it because, like you said, on Instagram and TikTok and all of these platforms, I think it's kind of an interesting in a way in that that's the new stage for these young talents to get out there and show what
Well,
they find funny.
I think it's good to for people to get a start that way, but the best venue for a comedy, well, at least our kind of any comedy, I think, is in a theater with you're seated with 500 other people or whatever it is, and so you get those laughs. That's why in TV, when we did Police Squad, the network wanted to add a laugh track, and we said, well, we really can't do that. We understand why sitcoms have laugh tracks, but this style was it could not have we couldn't admit that it was funny. Or
It
the
just
jokes were being made. Yeah.
yeah, I mean, adding a laugh track really defeats the purpose
It would.
of
But
the joke.
that's not to say that, and a lot, I don't want to bash all sitcoms. I
Oh
mean,
yeah.
Seinfeld, Larry David, Curb was done without a laugh track. That was fine. And Seinfeld was done in front of a live audience, and that worked fine. I mean, those things were genius. People have suggested to me, oh, you should do a sitcom. No, I'm not going to do a sitcom. I think, I could do a good one. And then I watch Seinfeld and I say, no, I can't do that. Just, you have to, there is something to be said for staying in your lane, doing what you do well, and do that. It's like there was a book written about called The Comfort Zone, and it actually said it's good to stay in your comfort zone. Because we're always taught, no, you got to get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah,
You
well,
don't get out of it.
it's yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for doing what you do well, kind of thing,
Right. Yeah.
and
No.
then relishing that and enjoying that.
And I'm proud of every movie that I've done because I each one I thought, whether it succeeded or not, was at least a good idea at the time, and even the ones that didn't, weren't hits at the box office. Now people don't even know they weren't hits at the box office because they're all. I always say, I never had any flops. I just had cult classics,
One of my favorite films, and I just rewatched it recently with my wife, is Ruthless People.
Right.
So was it fun to sort of break out of that spoof format and play in a different sort of
Right.
style?
Well, in that, we were trying to get out of our comfort zone. And also thinking maybe we should explore another genre because Top Secret didn't do that great at the box office. So we thought, well, maybe people are tired of spoof and we're going to try a farce. So Jeff Katzenberg called and he had the script by Dale Launer called Ruthless People. And I read it and I just laughed all the way through it. And it's great. And so we did that. And it's like nothing else that we've ever done. And Jerry did Ghost, which is nothing like we ever did, and that was fabulous.
One of the things I love about Ruthless People is like just the earnestness. Again, it's sort of like you have Judge Reinhold in there just as this good guy, and
Yeah.
it's so you're rooting for these characters,
Right,
and Danny DeVito is
yeah,
Danny
and
DeVito.
Dale Launer wrote great characters with a that you took seriously. And despite all the comedy, and you had a rooting interest for them. These are things that, we learn. I've learned more from my mistakes than I ever had from any of the successes.
Now, has there ever been a performer who just sort of really surprised you with their performance when they arrived on set?
Well, I had seen Charlie Sheen in Hot Shots, and he was great in that, and we just had a meeting and we hit it off immediately, and he was terrific in Scary Movie 3 and 4, and I think he was in 5 too at the beginning. Yeah, but nobody ever really surprised me. I mean, Michael Madsen was very funny, and without trying to be, because we played him in the 2 movies I did with him as the Michael Madsen character. He didn't have to go out of his comfort zone. And he was great. So that was, I guess that was surprising. I don't know. But I wasn't surprised because there was nobody who I couldn't figure out how to get to and direct and get a performance out of.
Now, in your book, Surely You Can't Be Serious, The True Story of Airplane, what did you feel was the most important to you story from the production to share? And is there anything that you couldn't fit through the edit? Anything else that you wanted to include?
Well, the book is not only about the production. There's a lot of funny stories about the production, but more it's woven into it. It's the story of how we started in Milwaukee, just let's do a show, and very amateurish. And we kind of learned as we went along. We weren't writers at the beginning, and we weren't directors, and we weren't producers, and I think it's kind of inspiring because I think people read the book and think, well, geez, if these guys could do it, maybe this is possible. And it's, the book is full of great stories of how we did it and how we took one step and how we took the setbacks. And I was the worst one. I was always, oh my, I couldn't believe, I just, because I always thought that we should have been 2 years ahead of time. We should have already been directing a movie in 1978, and we didn't until 1980, and we already should have been doing a movie in 1975, and we didn't till 77, all these things. But every setback turned out actually to be in our favor, because we couldn't get the financing for the first airplane script that we wrote in 1975. John Landis came to see our show. He said, "Why don't you guys do a movie of your show?" And so we did that because we couldn't, we always wanted to do Airplane. And so we sat on the set with John Landis and we learned. I mean, it was what a free course in, making a movie at every step of the way. And Landis was great. He added jokes, but the lesson we took out of that was that we had to direct it. We had to direct Airplane because, Landis was very gracious and took half of our suggestions, and we needed to get all of our suggestions done. So that's, but the book has just such great stories, and how we had to fight the Directors Guild for a three-man director's cut and credit, and we had to fight Paramount to be able to direct it, and it's just these funny stories on the way. And we had a lot of breaks.
I don't know if there's a lot of these opportunities because that's such a unique space in the 1970s and early 80s for film creation and people just doing new things. And like you said, it's a risk-averse world now.
Yeah, but there's, I think there's other ways, there's other venues. I don't know if the book can show one thing, is that if you're blocked for one path, take another path. You can always try to do it. Excuse me. And especially what we say in the book is, don't be intimidated by anything. We were always very headstrong, and we always believed that we could do it. And we left Milwaukee in a U-Haul truck, and people said, "Well, what are you going to do if you don't make it? What's your plan B?" And we kind of, that kind of stumped us. We never had a plan B. We were so either headstrong, confident, or totally naive that we actually thought we were going to make it. So it's a, that was, that's what makes it a great story.
Speaking of Milwaukee and great stories, you also have Before the Invention of Smiling, The Incredible Journey of the Zucker Family, from Horse and Buggy to Indoor. So that's an intergenerational
Indoor
story.
plumbing. You have to
Or
complete the joke. Yes,
indoor
right.
plumbing,
But anyways,
sorry.
no, that's a book that I wrote before Surely You Can't Be Serious. And I wrote that by myself because, I'm interested in history, I'm interested in genealogy, and I remembered, this was a project that I worked on over 20 years, and finally did it. But these are stories from my grandmother that I used to listen to, that she used to tell about her, the little village she grew up in Hungary in the late 1800s. And so I in the book, I made a transcript of these. I recorded her saying all these stories, and then I added a lot of family photographs, which I had collected. And then I knew what these photographs were about since she told me the story. And where there weren't pictures, I had an artist do drawings.
I had a very close relationship with my grandmother too. She was in the armed forces in World War II, and a lot of people I feel don't realize how much our grandparents, these earlier generations, have lived and experienced, and how much we can, not just learn but enjoy from hearing them tell these stories.
Right. And there was adventure. I mean, my life didn't have a lot of adventure comparatively, But, my grandmother had to walk all night over the Polish border, sneak into Poland. I mean, that was like, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so I got all those stories and then and put that into the book.
Well, you're working on the Star of Malta,
The Star of Malta, which is really just a like a $12 million movie, which is 10 cents. And I can't do Hollywood. They won't, they only want a big producer like Seth MacFarlane. That's fine. So I'm going to independent financing. And so we're collecting billionaires, and there's a production company that wants to do it, so they're putting in half. So we're putting it together.
And you've also got the Oktoberfest movie that you're
Yeah,
working
I'm
on,
working
right?
at, it's a German movie. And yeah, it's all centered on Oktoberfest. And I'm not writing that. I'm executive producing it. We're working on with a writer. My son and I are working on this together. So that's been fun.
I grew up in a town next to a town called Kitchener, which used to be called Berlin back
Oh.
before the second. So they have a huge Oktoberfest, and I can only imagine how crazy Oktoberfest gets in Germany if Kitchener, Ontario, Canada is
Oh,
pretty crazy
I guess I
Oktoberfest.
don't know too much about it, but we have a great writer who's writing it in German, and it'll be translated into English for us. They all speak perfect English.
It's amazing how many Europeans are two, three, four languages.
Right. Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
But last question for you. You've directed police procedural spoofs, horror movie spoofs, disaster movies, sports movies. Like, is there a genre or a film that you haven't had the opportunity to spoof yet that you'd love to take a swing at?
Well, I take it one at a time, and I don't look past my next opponent, as they say in the NFL. And so the genre I want to do is number one, film noir, which I've always loved that. Airplane is actually based on Zero Hour, which was film noir,
Yes.
and Police Squad was based on M Squad, which was film noir. So this is what I'm interested in. We have a and I've kind of learned over the past 30 years, 40 years, that the story is the most important thing. And Star of Malta has a great story and great characters. It's so good. It's just, it's not what Hollywood is doing. So I'll get it done. And then the next thing I want to do, I mean, the Naked Gun style comedy is something that still interests me, but I don't want to be a hack and just do the same LA cop movie that the Naked Gun. I did that before. Jerry and Jim and I didn't want to do Airplane 2. And so our idea for it, which we talk about in the book, we went to Eisner and Katzenberg, and Paramount said, okay, we'll do it. But what we don't want to do it in an airplane. We don't want to do it in an LA cop station. That's for Seth MacFarlane to do. So our idea was to do Bob Hayes and Julie Haggerty fly down the plane. They're going to get married. He takes her home to meet his family, and it's the Godfather. It's he's Michael Corleone. And I got to tell you, this is the studio heads 50 years ago. They loved it. They wanted to do it, but they had to get a Coppola's blessing, and he really wanted to do Airplane. He wanted to do Godfather 3, so that we couldn't do it.
Oh, well, I
Everybody
our
would have been
loss.
better off had they let us do Airplane, whatever it was. Yeah, The Godfather.
I think that's such a brilliant idea, and yeah, we're really worse off for not having
Well, it is kind of too bad, but I've always succeeded in the end, so it's just taking me longer, and I have no patience, which if you read the book, you'll see I have no patience. Jerry and Jim had plenty of patience. They said, okay, great, we'll go back and do the theater more for another 3 years or something. And I'm going, geez, I'm a director. I want to be on the set. I don't want to be dancing on a stage on Pico Boulevard. So anyway, so but it's a fun book, and I've had a fun life. I will do more movies, despite, Hollywood. That's just kind of what makes things interesting.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to the Star Malta Noir. Your spoof here, two of things I love coming together.
If you love noir, have you heard of a movie called Detour?
No,
If,
no.
okay, you should check that out. That's what Star Malta is based on.
Oh, awesome. Well, I will give it a watch.
So that's that we found a 0 hour, which is great. So now we just have to go ahead and do it.
Excellent. All right, well, thank you very much for chatting with me today, and
Sure.
look forward to seeing your future films.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.